So Maharaj, the program today will be, I asked Maharaj, what would you like to speak about tonight? And he says, something very important, near-death experience. And so he's going to share a near-death experience, and he started to explain. And then I said, do you have any near-death experience? And I said, oh, my whole life is a near-death experience. But yes, I can think of one of them. So we will tell our stories. And then Maharaj will lead us in a kirtan. And then we'll have prasad. Does that sound like a good plan? Now, sometimes, especially in bhakti, we need a little push. Just like when there's a big boulder on top of a hill. It needs a little push, a little earthquake perhaps, a big wind or a flood, and then the boulder starts going on its own. How many of you were pushed into bhakti by what appeared to be sort of tragic? Yeah, sometimes people hit a rock bottom in their life. Maybe they become an alcoholic. Or maybe they someone they witnessed or someone they loved died and it reminds them, my father died. Sometimes people get great success and they realize, what's the big deal? This is nothing. This is what the whole world wants. It's nothing. But death is a big one. And sometimes these near-death experiences for bhakti yogis, they can be a real trampoline to launch us deeper and higher in our spiritual life. Can I share one with me?
Yes.
I have? Is that okay?
Please.
So this was right after I stopped being a brahmachari. And I had just put on white. That means you're changing your orange clothes. Now you're thinking, oh, maybe I'll get married. And I was doing music as a brahmachari in a punk, straight-edge, Krishna core band, traveling the world. And the band started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And we just got signed on a very big record company. And one of their headquarters was in Brazil. So they said, will you please come to Brazil? We'll prepare an entire tour for you. Now, I don't know if anybody ever heard of us in Brazil. But when we got there, the taxi was taking us to the hotel. And the taxi player turned on the radio. Taxi driver turned on the radio. And I heard our band on the radio. I said, oh, that's weird. I said, is this like some small radio station? He says, no, this is the biggest radio station in all of Brazil. And then he turned the channel, and we were on another radio station. And so I got back to the hotel and met the rest of the band. And they came up to me and they said, Raghunath, you're not going to believe it. We just went to the mall. And somebody said, it's the guys from Shelter. And all these people started coming around us like we were famous. And then I started thinking, you know, we might be famous in Brazil. We didn't know we were famous, but it turned out they somehow got us famous in Brazil. And it was like our biggest tour ever, and they had planned press conferences in every city, and the devotees from all the temples would show up at the airports, and it was like one time we got off of the airport, off the plane, and they're, you know, in America, in the United States, you hear about South America, you think of drugs and drug smuggling and kidnapping. That was going through my brain. And when we came to get our luggage, we saw five men with suits on and sunglasses. And I think, oh, maybe this is like the mafia. And they're looking at us like we've done something wrong. We're getting our luggage and we're sort of scared. I think, we're getting kidnapped? Are these guys the FBI? I don't know what's going on. And then I asked the Brazilian tour manager, I said, why are these guys looking at us? And he said, they work for you. They're your bodyguards. I said, well, why do we need bodyguards? Nobody knows us. And he goes, you'll see. So he drove to a mall. And the mall, it looked like there was a riot going on. I said, what is the matter? What's going on here? And then the van stopped, and the riot came to the van. And they were just fans. And they were shaking the car. I've never had this experience. I was always a little bit popular. But this was the first time in my life I've ever been seriously proper. They were like shaking the van like Elvis Presley. And the bodyguards came out and made a human circle. And they walked us, protected in that circle, to the record store. In the old days, they had record stores. That's where they'd sell records. A record's a thing. So there was 800 people greeting us at this record store, and we would just sit there and sign autographs. Now, we haven't even played one show yet. And the first show we were going to do was in Rio de Janeiro. And we stayed at this very beautiful place in Ipanema, which is one of the beaches in Rio de Janeiro. And I was thinking, you know what? To make this tour work, because I lived in the temple, so every morning I would go to Mangalarti, Guru Puja, greeting the deities. And that was my sadhana. But when we were on tour, I had to create my own sadhana. Because things move very quickly. Sometimes we stay up very late. But now it's the first day, so I'm thinking, okay, I will wake up early. I'm going to chant 16 rounds nonstop. Then I'm going to chant one chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And that's going to be the first part of my morning program. So I woke up very early, and the rest of the band is asleep. And these very big waves at the beach. And so I chanted 16 rounds in one place, and I chanted my chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And then I thought, you know, it would be very nice, and it's very good with Ayurveda to take a morning bath in the sea. I thought, this is a great idea. So I should get somebody to come with me. So the only person at the hotel that was awake was my publicist. Publicist is the one who contacts all the magazines and arranges all the interviews, and he was Brazilian. And I said, hey, Paulo, will you come take bath? Or take bath. Only devotees talk like this. Do you want to swim with me in this ocean? And he said, I will go with you, but I will not swim. Now, I'm very, very persuasive. I was like, come on, it's very good for you. It's very healthy to swim. And he's like, I just ate. It's not good to swim. And I said, come on, first thing in the morning, you got to take a bath in the ocean. It is so good for your digestion. It makes you so strong. It makes you so healthy. And he says, Raghunath, these waves are so high. I said, we don't have to go in the deep water. We're just going a little water right here. There's a little, after the waves break, then more water comes in. We'll just get a little wet. So I convinced him. So, and no one was on the beach. And so we were just swimming and having a good time and laughing. And swimming and having a good time and laughing. And swimming and having a good time and laughing. And all of a sudden I don't see him anymore. No one's here. And then I hear a voice. Help me. Help me. I've got a cramp. I'm drowning. Help me. Please help me. And I see a face on the water like this. Please help me, Raghunath. I'm drowning. And you don't know if a person's serious. So I'm are you joking? I swam closer. And as I got closer, here's your first lesson. Never approach a drowning person from the front. What happens? Yes! And he grabbed me like a tiger. And he forced my head underwater. And he started screaming at the top of his lungs, help me! I'm drowning! Help me! And, you know, it's instinctual. You don't know what you're doing. And he's pulling my head underwater, gripping my eyeball, and pulling me. And I'm starting to choke under the water while he's screaming. And I forcibly push off the floor to get up. And I'm still worried about him. And he keeps pulling me underneath. Now somehow,
in all this screaming, some man came over and saw us, and a big guy just hooked him and dragged him to the beach. But at that point, I was over my head in the water, and I was already choking, and I couldn't breathe. And then I realized, I need help. Have you ever, like, been swimming at the beach and sort of like, and you're not quite sure if you're in trouble? And you don't want to be foolish and make a fool out of yourself, so you're like, and you're trying to sort of be happy, yet not lose your cool. Then there's a thing, then there's a line you cross when you're just like, and you start screaming for the life. It's humiliating. And I cross that line. I started going, help me! Help me! Help me! And on my third help me, I got hit with a massive wave. And by God's grace, I came up and got hit by another wave. And then I came up for the third time and got hit by a third wave. And when I came up the fourth time, I was so far in the ocean, I don't even know how I got there. I was behind all of the waves. And I was just thinking, don't panic, don't panic, don't panic, don't panic. You just gotta call for help. But I already couldn't breathe. So I just got to the surface and I said,
but that's what it sounded like, because the waves are so big and making so much noise.
I was like, Raghunath, no one can hear you. No human is out there. I don't know what happened to those two, but now you're alone, and no one can hear you with the sound of these waves. And I thought to myself, no human's going to help me. And I said, Raghunath, now's the time. You call for Krishna. You gotta be like Gajendra. You gotta be like Draupadi. You gotta put your hands in the air and call Krishna. And I said, Krishna, help me! And guess what? Krishna didn't help me either. I thought a lifeboat was gonna drop from the sky. Like Draupadi had, sorry. An unlimited sorry. I thought I was going to get an unlimited life vest. Didn't happen. And then sort of occurred in my brain, a curtain came down, like the end of the performance. And in that curtain, there was like my own personal mind was talking to me. Humans aren't going to help you, Raghu. Krishna's not going to help you. This is the day you're going to die. And I know you weren't ready for it. But today's that day. And it was like everything just sort of went silent. Oh, and then I thought, and this is how people die every day. It's not like I'm so unique. This is how people die. They get in the water. And then all of a sudden, some thing happens, and they weren't expecting it, and they die. How many people have died not expecting to die that day? They must all say the same thing. And then I said it. I wasn't expecting to die today. But today's that day. Now, the first thing I said to myself was, thank Krishna, I finished my rounds. And I chanted the Bhagavad Gita. But I thought, no one in the band even knows where I am. And I thought of my mother. I was like, my mother doesn't even know where my mother doesn't know where I was anytime. My mother doesn't know where I am. And I said, Krishna. And then I started lamenting. Because I know, spiritually, I like spirituality, but I'm not very advanced, and I know it. And I said, Krishna, I'm not very advanced. I'm not qualified to die and become a gopi. Die and dance with Krishna. I'm not expecting that, Krishna. But can you please, in my next life, let me take birth in a family of pure devotees? And I gave up. I had no more energy, and I just gave up. That's the story. Thank you very much, Narada. Then, out of nowhere, a 13-year-old boy on a surfboard who didn't speak a word of English came out and saved my life. I gave up and I just chanted the Panchatapa Maha Mantra again and again. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Adwaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Now imagine you chanting that underwater. That's what I sounded like. Prabhu Sri Krishna Chaitanya. I just chanted that again and again and again and again, and then he saved my life. And I found that in all my excitement of all the great things happening in my life at the time, it can reverse in a moment. That's why as bhakti yogis, we don't get too depressed and we don't get too excited, because we understand this world changes like the seasons change. Just like if you ever sail the boat, the wind comes. You can't change the wind. I can't stand on the boat and yell at the wind. All I can do is set a better sail. All I can do is set the sail. I can't yell at the wind. And I think a lot of you guys are going through different seasons of your life right now. And some of you are very high and very low. That's okay. Is anybody going through a tough period in their life right now? Raise your hand if you are. It's okay. Yeah, it's always okay. Okay, so if you're going through a tough period of your life, I've got some good news for you. Seasons change. You've witnessed, you've been through bad seasons, and they've changed. All we can do is hold on to Krishna when things get rough. How many people are going through a good period? Everything's going good. Looking up. Raise your hand if things are looking up right now. It's okay if things are looking up. I got some terrible news for you guys. I've got some horrible, horrible news. Seasons change. And what do you do when things are looking really up? You hold on to Krishna's feet. Because seasons change. And I can't just run around for an endless summer. I have to just hold on to Krishna. And then when I least expect it, that death will come. And it won't be tragic. Because once you add Krishna to anything, it becomes all auspicious. Isn't that true? If you're a drug addict and then you say, oh, I can't do this anymore, I want to add Krishna, guess what? You thank God for your addiction. Why? Because you realize that's what sprung you to Krishna. When you add Krishna to anything, it makes life magical and auspicious. All we have to do is add Krishna. Now, I don't know about you, but I am very eager to hear Maharaj's near-death experience. Hari Bol.
Very, very, very good. Very well spoken. I thought you would end like this, when you add Krishna to your life in whatever situation you are, it will turn. I would like to sing a song about this before we start. Actually, I would request Gaur Krishna to sing. On which tonality do you sing, Gaur Krishna? Oh, it's not switched on. The song which we are going to sing has whichever country you live in, however you dress, whatever culture you may adopt, just chant Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman. Please repeat. Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman. Whichever holy place you may live in, whatever work you do, whatever name you go by, just chant Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman. Whatever joys you experience, in whichever association, however you live your life, just chant
Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman.
Whichever illness you may have, or whatever pleasure you may live in, whichever path you follow, just chant
Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman.
Whichever type of body you have, whatever kind of house you dwell in, whatever relationships you have, just chant
Radha Raman,
Radha Raman,
Radha Raman.
Whatever attachment you have, whatever your passion, whatever you renounce, just chant
Radha Raman,
Radha Raman,
Radha Raman.
Yes, but you have to do it a little louder. Whatever you take pride in, whatever you are respected or disrespected for, just chant
Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman.
Whichever spiritual path you follow, however you act, whatever understanding you abide by, just chant
Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman.
Whether you live in this world, whether you live in the next world, or whether you live in Goloka, just chant
Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman.
Shamne
shame,
jisabe shame, parive shame rao. Radha Raman, Radha. Dishekamame, 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 one more time. Radha Ramam, Radha Ramam, Radha Ramam, Jaho. Everyone, Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman. One more time, please. Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Jaho. Dishabogame, Dishayogame, everybody. Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Raman, Radha Shashana me, Shashana me la
oh.
La 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 la. Alócame, 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 this is how they sing in Vrindavan Dham. Whichever spiritual path you follow, whichever philosophy you accept, however gracefully or ungracefully you live, just chant. In bhakti, our qualifications, material qualifications, and disqualifications don't really count. And that means that Krishna can come at any time to anyone. I would like to share today my near-death experience. Could be also summarized as an out-of-body experience. I had been committed or given over to the hospital. I had some problems in the leg. I had hernia on the right side, and I had something on the head which needed to be removed. Harmless tumor which destroyed my beautiful appearance. It looked like a horn coming out. It was very large size horn. So some beauty operation was required. You know, you give a lecture and you have this large size horn on you. It came like here. Anyways, so I was anesthetized, but in the midst of the surgery, I felt a tremendous pain, reminding me of what I have heard of Chinese torture. It can go for a long time, the Chinese torture. And I just felt how the pain was coming closer. It felt like an army of gray men coming out of the forest, surrounded by fog, but they were coming closer and closer and becoming more distinctly visible. The pain was just terrific and too much. So I could locate it. The foot was already done, the horn not, but the hernia, they were just opening the belly. And I could feel the surgeon's knife separating the skin, and it felt in the first moment only piercing, but then the pain became screaming loud, and I felt I will not be able to stand this much longer. So I tried to give a sign with the hand. I ordered my hand to go up, but it wouldn't move because, you know, when someone tickles you on the stomach, you almost involuntarily begin to shake. So when someone operates you on the stomach, there is an involuntary reaction that is much stronger than tickling can produce.
Maharaj, were you not on any anesthesia?
I was, but this the anesthetist had said, you won't feel a bit. However, I felt everything. They had given me too little anesthesia. And because I'm extremely sensitive, I could feel everything. And somehow the anesthesia receded. It was a newcomer. He was from Lund, or south of Sweden. And I have him on my list. No, not in a harmful way. I'm just explaining. We have some talk still to do. So, anyway, so then I couldn't move. I said to myself, well, how is a decision made? It start to move. It starts somewhere in the brain. I forgot, is it the left or right? I don't care. Somewhere in the brain, and a spark has to come, and it needs to be moved to the limbs. But it did not work. There was communication breakdown between the brain and the rest of the body. It was excruciating, painful until the moment where something snapped. And I came out of the body and I heard the surgeon, Dr. Bauer, talk to his other doctor about golf playing. And Dr. Bauer wanted to explain a long range move, so he made like this, but then panic broke loose. He cut an important blood vessel and a lot of blood started to come. It looked to me like a fountain of blood pulsating out of that wound, and then everything became very serious. They started, oh, we have a serious problem, and this person's hemoglobin values, you know, when the, anyways, is low. So they started to panic, and I couldn't watch any longer. I don't know how you are when you receive an injection. Normally you don't look. Too fast. But when the blood comes, then you don't want to look. And I found out I was not pain. No, I was not registering pain. I was a kind of floating over my body. I was witnessing from a different position the doctors and the helpers. I was working independent from my eyes, seeing independent from my eyes, and thinking independent from my brain. I was watching it without the help of my bodily senses. And I thought, wow, this is good. I floated around a little, and then I said, I'm curious, if Agnidev, not the famous Agnidev, some other Agnidev from Austria, if he is really in the waiting room and if he is praying for me or if he is asleep. Agnidev was a priest who woke up at an inhuman time at 3 o'clock in the morning, and he would sleep at the time when the surgery was going on, and I wanted to know, is he really praying? So I willed myself, just by the will, out of the room. Have you ever gone through a wall? I did it. I went through many walls. And just by my willing, and went through the corridors, I somehow knew, or something knew, Haribo, Hare Krishna, how to go, and I came into the room where Agnidev was actually sitting on a chair and, yes, praying. So I was just next to him, and I thought, well, what can I do now, which is good enough so that I can remind him later? So I built myself to a vase, and I was just about trying to kick the vase from the table, but then I thought, Satchinandan Swami, this is not a time to play around. You bet, this might be your death. And you better become serious now. No longer your playful nature is required. And wheeled myself back into the surgeon's hall, and came back, and they were still frantically trying to bring this together, the cut blood vessel. And at that time, I very, very, very much panicked. The first thing I saw is myself in the wheels of time. I could see that I was moved by time. It was a little bit like a clockwork, and I was in it. Maybe you have seen Charlie Chaplin movies. There is one movie, I'm not so sure about the name. Was it something orange? Something with orange. It's a, you know, the fast and silent movie. And you see him between the wheels. I saw a spark of light between revolving wheels of time. And then I thought, oh no, this could be what I have been lecturing about when it came to lecturing about death. And it was. I saw the place of my birth. Then a quick new scene came. I saw my youth. I saw myself with a big cone of sweets entering the school. You know, we in Germany get the children get on that most terrible day a cone of sweets. Is it cone? Well, a lot of sweets, chocolate, pralines are in there. And I had an especially big one and was especially pleased with my, I saw this. I saw other scenes. I saw myself in a Rolling Stones concert. I saw myself growing up on an island. I saw myself sitting in the fields, thinking about God. Everything passed in fast motion, and I was feeling in my mind, wow, I don't want to see the last scene, the last episode. It can only mean one thing. I'm moving towards death now. So at that time I did, and here we are very similar in our accounts, I did what Raghunath Prabhu has so nicely said. I actually prayed, but not lip prayer, it was heart prayer. I said, my dear Lord, whatever happens now, please be next to my side, and may this be according to your plan. My dear everyone, at that time I saw an image of Krishna. He looked at me with a little you would say in English, arresting face. It was not stern expression, but it was an expression which in American English you would say was, please help me, incredulous and not believing. And he communicated, how can you pray like this? I'm always by your side. Don't you know this by now, Mr. Preacher? How can you? But then he turned very, he became very kind in his expression and said, don't worry, this is one of the many experiences in your life which you will certainly survive. There are many things you still need to learn and many things you need to do for me. And my dear everyone, moments later I woke up, I was pushed on this wheel bed out of the surgeon's theater, the operation hall. There was this anesthetist from Lund, and he said in Swedish, which now I don't remember how to say it, didn't I tell you, you wouldn't feel a thing? And I was too exhausted to get into a philosophical argument with him. I just came out and was wheeled into my time, into my bed, into my room. My dear everyone, let's stop here for a moment. What is significant here is that the self, the person who you truly are, is different from the body and the brain. It is outside. It is this parameter. It is very different. Therefore, I could go out of the body and still see. Therefore, I could enter the waiting room and still think. I was thinking without my brain, which was resting there, and I was seeing without my eyes, because the body is and the mind is only a covering of the true self. Later, I came back when the wounds were healed, to the doctor who wanted to see me again, and he said, so is the healing going well? Yes, I said, but I want to talk to you. Oh, yes. Why did you talk about golf playing, why did you hurt me so much? Dr. Bauer said, everything went according to protocol. I have proofs, because patients usually, when they are not satisfied, they can sue the doctor. I said, I'm not there for suing you. I just want to say, you spoke about golf playing. And since my father knows golf, I can tell you the what is it called?
The swing.
The swing. And he said, no, I didn't talk about golf playing. He was afraid. I said, here's my number if you wish to discuss this matter with me. And do not fear, I will not sue you. Only 2 days later, Dr. Bauer's secretary was on the phone and said, can Dr. Bauer please talk to you? What is a good time? So we made an appointment, and he said, is this an out-of-body experience which you had? I said, yes. And he said, what do you conclude from it? I said, you tell me. And he said, well, you couldn't have heard anything. You couldn't have seen anything from your position. You were
seeing the ceiling.
And your description of, I had also told him about the waiting room. You couldn't have any cognizance, cognizance of the waiting room if you were not different from the body. I said, precisely, that's the point. We are different from the body. I due to your kind operation, I have noticed this. I know it now. I have experienced it. And I have a Bhagavad Gita for you here. It's your personal copy, and I request you to read it. If you don't read anything else, read the second chapter. There you find a spiritual explanation of what I have experienced. This was fast, backward. The last time, no, it was actually fast, yeah, fast backwards. The last time I was, I saw my spiritual master was in London. I remember I came, I had somehow, someone had arranged a special darshan. I came with five other monks to him. He was very emaciated, and it was known amongst disciples that he might leave the body in a few months. He had indicated this. It was the evening of his life, and he was about to say goodbye. He had come one more time to see his disciples. So we all settled into the room, and he looked at us, and he said, "So." He would introduce sometimes important points with this long drawn out, "So, have you understood our philosophy?" So some of us piped up, chup, 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 chup. But I always say the wrong thing when I'm asked, so I was silent. Then after some time, he was not satisfied with the explanations or the answers. One of my good friends said, "Yes, the essence is that whomever you meet, tell him Krishna Upadesh." It means the instructions of Krishna. But here my spiritual master got very, very intense. He said, "But what is this instruction of Krishna? Have you understood the philosophy?" Silence. Then Srila Prabhupada looked at all of us and he said, "First of all," long pause, "you have to understand," another long pause, "that life is eternal." Throughout the Vedic teachings, my dear everyone, that is the instruction. But I would like to read to you a poem by a Spanish author so that you hear it also from another side. "To understand who you are must be the basis of your spiritual practice. Otherwise, you are engaging in fanciful imaginations." Here is the poem for you. It's very nice. The poem is called "I Am Not I." I am not I. I'm this one walking beside me, whom I do not see, who at times I manage to visit, at whom and whom at other times I forget. The one who remains silent while I talk. The one who forgives, sweet, when I hate. The one who takes a walk when I am indoors. The one the one who will remain standing when I die. I am not the false I, the false ego. I am different. No? Don't we all know this? That while we talk, there is a voice which says, do you talk the right things? Don't we all know this silent observer in our life? Yes, but do we know ourselves? I would like to make a little thing at the end. Can I, Raghunath? Who are you? Are you your name? This is something for you to reflect. Are you your virtues or your sins? Your deeds and achievements? Will any of these live your life for you? Are you your hands or legs, your brain or heart? Are you your innermost thoughts, your secret moods? Are you your body or mind? Or are you inside them? Now please look back at your life. See yourself as a child with toys, a teenager with many questions, a young adult with an education and an apartment. And now look into the uncomfortable future. See yourself growing old with the tired body of an old man or woman. Your many roles have changed over time, but throughout these changes you have always been here. Who is that you? From childhood to youth to old age, your body has changed many times, but you have been there throughout. Who is that you? This out-of-body experience convinced me that I am not the body, and it has given me solace. Whatever I experience as the unavoidable ups and downs, the joys and the ecstasies that life holds in its hand and has bestowed so abundantly to me, whatever it is, I am a resident of the spiritual world. And through this cultivation of bhakti, I am building a bridge now from the here to the there. Good. This is my own near what is out of body experience, really. There was a dangerous situation, we can call it also near death experience, but for me this is has always been a place I visit, a memory to which I return. Hari Bol.
That was better than mine. That was beautiful, Maharaj. It gives you more faith than any lecture or any book or any sometimes person that you meet. It's just to have that experience.
Yeah. And I believe on the bhakti path, it's very good to have these lectures because they point us in the direction in which we have to walk and look. I think it is good to have these discussions because they fan our spark also. But there is also a time where experience is required. And such experiences are treasures in life. And I know, I remember very fondly when you revisited us during the corona time when everything was shut down. You came, actually, and we did a program with, you know, there was 1.50 meter compulsory distance between everyone with masks and so on. And during this time, we had also personal or more private programs in our home where we were not so panic-stricken. I remember you told many of your experiences, and I believe perhaps these experiences have formed you more than only the theoretical knowledge. You have seen, yeah, this is all true, I see it. Krishna sent that 13-year-old boy on the surfboard, there's a big sea, big ocean, and there's only one little 50 square centimeters where one Raghunath is drowning, but he found you in this 50 square meters, square centimeters.
I think sometimes those tragedies, without the direction of the lecture, without direction of the books, without directions of the philosophy, life just becomes random, bitter. You can become bitter, you can become angry at God, or you can become just angry at life. And with it, it changes everything.
Yes, where you stumble, your treasures lie. Or Rumi says, where there is a crack in the pot, the light can enter. These cracks in our life, pang, where a stone flew in our direction, and we say, oh, that hurts so much. Auvaya, we say in Croatian language, auvaya. These things, in retrospect, when we can look back and the pain is no longer so overwhelming, have often proved to be instruments for our awakening. Often. With this experience at the Waldkirchener Hospital, I wouldn't be so convinced that I'm eternal.
We say, in Wisdom of the Sages, we often say, you either become bitter with life, or you become better. You become bitter, or you become better. So many things are just, they can be so sour if you look at it in material existence. And you can become angry, and you can become resentful. And everyone gets dealt some type of Himalayan peak to climb in this life. Another analogy we use is the world is like a prison, and we're prisoners, and we're doing time in prison. And sometimes in a prison, you become responsible for what you've done. I've done something wrong. And then you start to repent for what you've done wrong, and you change your behavior, and the people who are running the prison say, you know what? You've changed. We're going to give you early parole. We're going to let you out early. We're going to give you special privileges. We're going to give you the key to the library. So sometimes even within the prison, someone feels some relief in the prison, and sometimes they let them out early. This would be like someone like yourself. You're sort of in the material world, but you're not bound up with the same problems a lot of us have with our minds, our senses, etc. But the person who goes to prison and blames the police and blames the warden and blames everybody and takes no responsibility for themselves And sometimes they become bigger criminals in the prison. They become more hateful of everybody. They commit crime in prison. And then because of it, they get an extended prison sentence. And this is my material thinking sometimes. People have wronged me. People have hurt me. This isn't fair. How dare they? And because there's no responsibility taken, I just never learned my lesson. And so therefore, I have to keep going. I have to do more time. And so I look at the Bhagavad Gita, or this message of the Srimad Bhagavatam, as this is like an access point out of prison. It is it's a chance to take truth and take some type of radical responsibility for what I've got.
Very wise, very wise. Yeah, very wise.
It's the Bhagavatam is wise.
Yeah. Yes, 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 yes. I wanted to thank you for bringing it to the point of you know, how do they say when one finger goes like this, three show back on you what you have done. And if you can take responsibility. My near-death, or let us say, out-of-body experiences has made me very thoughtful about that I'm an eternal soul. It's just so wonderful. And there is in the Upanishads this verse, and I would like you to follow with your mind what you will hear. Who is it that sees the world? It's a question. The eyes. Who is it that sees the eye? The mind. When we see something with our eyes, we think about it and interpret what we see. But who is it who sees the mind? The intelligence. Who is it then who sees the intelligence? The soul, the Atman. And who is it that sees the Atman? Krishna. Yes, God. So it's good to sometimes take steps back in our lives and see our lives again. And the more you go back, the more blissful you become. The more you're wrapped up in the illusion of I'm the body and the mind and blah, the more dark you become. But the more, if you want to have a bright life, move back to the intelligence at least, then to the soul, and then to Krishna. Then you're out of the darkness. Yeah. Krishna. Good. I think now perhaps you want to sing a bhajan and then I sing a bhajan, or vice versa. We want to hear a nice Raghunath Kirtan.
Yeah? Sing a little.
Yeah? Did you like to sing this? Radha Ramani.
Oh, so nice. Yes.
I thought, Raghunath, this you can also take.
And I will take it.
Utilize it.
Beautiful.
It has also, the wordings are very open and free. And did you also appreciate Gokrishna singing it with his...
Hari Bol! And our special 14-year-old Vrindavan player, Kunya Bihari.
Oh. Are you a Kunya Bihari? Son of Rasamrita and name of father? Yes, I know. Oh.
Krishna, Krishna, Hare.